Oh, snap! Snap!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of a raw dog fooding company where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. And I'll tell you why we say that, why we say friends, don't let friends feed kibble. Because as Amy Marshall says in her book, Why You Need to Feed Your Dog a Raw Food Diet. In chapter 10, she said, because dog food ingredients are often low quality and potentially toxic. Would you agree with that, Dr. Jasek?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I don't let people off the hook at all with the kibble anymore. Like people say, can I do a combination? Can I feed a little bit? I got a bag I got to use up. Like, you want your dog to be healthy? Get rid of it. Donate it to a rescue or shelter. They have limited resources, so they have to feed whatever they can get, you know, donate it to somebody. But if you really want your dog to be healthy, you have to get him off the kibble and get him on a fresh food diet. I mean, I don't feel like I can even work with people that will insist on feeding kibble because it's so damaging to the body that nothing else I do is going to work because I focus on helping the body to heal itself. It can't do that if you're feeding a toxic food. So people really are wasting their time and money with me if they're going to continue feeding kibble. And that's just the way it is.
I think that people don't even think about, they're a little bit removed of where some of the ingredients come from in this low quality pet food. And even if you're buying some of the premium ones, the question is, what happens to unclaimed animals that are often carted away by rendering companies? Now, this comes out of Amy Marshall's book, which I really do like and I recommend. But she talks about where do these unclaimed animals come from? Here's a couple of things that she lists: veterinary offices, animal hospitals, animal shelters, animal control, roadkill, and zoos. And she said, well, this may sound creepy. Yeah, it's a normal practice, you guys. It's a normal practice. So is grocery stores. That she says, what do you think happens to all the unsold meat on the grocery store shelves?
Good point. That
can no longer be sold to people. She said, these are shipped off to what is called rendering facilities. So what does this include? Defective meat, spoiled or moldy meat, expired meat, unsold meat. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is why she talks about that there's a lot of stuff that ends up in pet food, in kibble. Okay. Not raw dog food. Although I will say this, there are some raw dog food companies out there that are also rendering companies, okay, that pick up dead animals. And a lot of times these are 4D, dead, diseased, down, and dying. And I always say to people, I don't know if that actually, I don't know what that, you know, long-term effects would be on your dog. I'm just not going to feed it and I'm not going to consult on it because I already have a hard enough time selling pure raw dog food when we have, Dr. Jasek, the veterinarian community going with a different narrative. I just had some pet parents this week who said to me, he said, okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's all conventional vets know. You know, and what they, and there's just this, you know, mind block. I was actually watching, it was a podcast talking more about human medicine. And they talked about, they use the term zombie doctors and doctors that this would be human doctors that just go by what, you know, the quote unquote standard of care is in the profession. And they just stop thinking for themselves. They don't, they're not motivated to learn anything new or look at anything new. And it's the same thing in the veterinary profession. There's a bunch of zombie vets out there that are just go with the mainstream, go what they're told to do. You know, don't think for yourself or look at your patients and say, well, they're not getting any better. Maybe we need to do something different here. I mean, that's what's motivated me. Like, pets just keep getting sicker with all the conventional stuff. So maybe as practitioners, we need to start looking at some different ways of doing things, but nope, it just doesn't seem to happen. They just keep their heads in their little boxes and, you know, push prescription diets and vaccines. I tell you what, I just want to scream every time I hear that somebody's been turned away from a vet clinic because they refuse to get a rabies vaccine and they have a sick pet. They shouldn't be vaccinating these pets anyway. And the clinics won't even see it. They won't help the pet because the people refuse to get a rabies vaccine. That's malpractice, in my opinion. It's just ridiculous because the two have nothing to do with each other, but they will send people, nope, our rules say you got to have current vaccines, got to get that rabies shot, and they will turn people away. And it just makes me sick. It really does.
Well, I don't know if you have seen the article that Dana Scott from Dogs Naturally has put out, but the title of the article is Why Vets Are Getting Away with Murder. And you guys have got to read, this article. I mean, it is in your face, because she says, despite the advances in medicine, modern dogs are living shorter, sicker lives than their ancestors, and vets aren't taking responsibility. And in the article, she says, vets don't understand immunology or vaccines. And that's right. What she says. And she backs it up with a lot of information. And there's three different vets that make these different statements about training on vaccines. So in this article from Dr. Stephen Blake, he said, you know, I was taught vaccines were safe, and it was implied there had been safety studies done on them before they were used on the general public. He says they're not safe, and they have not had any safety studies done on them. And Dr. Jeff Feynman says, you know, his training in vet school was not complete with regard to the harmful effects that vaccines have on the immune system. And Dr. Mark Carpenter says vaccination in college was skimmed over with little discussion of potential risk involved. And in practice, he says that he's seen what he believes to be vaccine-related problems of skin disease, which is allergenic to things that are in the vaccine, and they have problems with the skin, inflammatory bowel disease, and epilepsy, which we're in his practice, he seemed to have been triggered or coincided with a vaccine. So, you know, we talk about this, Dr. Jasek, all the time. That's just in the vaccines, right? Mm-hmm. That's just in the vaccines. And what we're talking about on the food in this article at the bottom, she said, you know, look, veterinary malpractice, it's an illusion, right? And you've talked about this a lot because this is standard of care.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, so what can we do? Stop buying, and she says, stop buying their crappy prescription food,
right?
Stop doing that. And yet, we still have this, I don't know what it is. We have talked so much about the prescription food. We have talked about the problems, but people still buy it.
You know, they want their dogs to be healthy, and they feel like there's, you know, there's no other options. And they're heard all these horrible things about raw food, but you know, people have to learn, you know, if they want a different type of care in the clinics, then they have to start pushing back. They can't just roll over and say, well, they wouldn't take care of my pet if I didn't get the vaccine. Or, you know, if I'm going to feed raw, then they won't work with me. Well, you have your choice. I mean, I don't work with people to feed kibble. So you could say, I'm doing the same thing, but I have that, you know, prerogative as a practice owner, but the reason I say that is because pets just don't heal if they're on kibble. If people really want their pets healthy, they have to do a fresh food diet. And I think a lot of people are too afraid to stand up to their veterinarians and say, no, I'm not going to do the vaccine. And if you make me do it, I'm going to take my business somewhere else. You know, if we're a profit-driven clinic and they hear that enough times, then if nothing else, you're hitting them in the pocketbook and maybe that'll make them take notice.
Obviously, all of us that are in this industry, what do we see? We see unhealthy dogs. We see vaccine damaged dogs. We see a lot of different things. And in this article, she says, just because we can't sue vets doesn't mean you can't sock it to them financially. Right?
Right.
And she's saying, stop buying their crappy food. And if you demand informed consent, which again, none of that is happening, because informed consent looks like this. Here's the pros. Here's the cons. What is your decision? Not, I'm not going to help you because you are not doing what I want you to do, which is taking this vaccine or this rabies shot. That's not informed consent. She said, so you need to read that article. Again, it's called Why Vets Are Getting Away with Murder. And she said, look your vet in the eye and tell him that the core vaccines he wants to give your dogs is not only unnecessary, but dangerous. And she said, and then have the paperwork to back it up, because that is what our pet parents are missing. Once they are hit with that look and that disapproval, their minds sort of go blank, and they may not have the information that they actually need to have in order to back up their claims. It's the same way in the medical field, Dr. Jasek. So my mom recently went to the doctor, right? My mom is 78. And he was bullying her about getting the COVID vaccine or the COVID jab. It's not a vaccine. We know that. Right. He actually told my mother, there's only been one person that has died from the vaccine.
Oh, gosh.
Those were his words. And if you look at the CDC report, that is so far from the truth. Okay. And thank God she's very educated. Thank God. Right. But I'm telling you that the generation of our parents, were sort of trained to respect authority, right? And so a lot of them don't question unless they are actually educated in this area. Again, when you're having issues with your pet, you got to take all the extenuating circumstances out of it, because I will have people say, well, nothing's changed except the raw food. Yeah, but then you've done sprays, right? Flea and tick sprays, and you're giving treats from several different sources, and maybe you've just gotten on some sort of medication. So there's all these different extenuating circumstances, right? And what I always try to look at is, what is the most toxic thing that's going in the body? What is it that can be disrupting the body? I have a hard time really seeing that real food in a 80-10-10, 70-15-15, you know, where you have the meat, bone, organ, fat ratios, right? And you're doing variations. What could it be, right? What could it be? And so these are the things that we have to get pet parents looking at, because I cannot make the leap that says my pet does better on a synthetic preservative filled processed food than it does on a real food diet. I can't make that leap. I will never make that leap. Mm-mm. Doesn't make sense.
Nope. I don't either. I won't make that leap either. Now, they're very crafty, these companies, because these foods have such poor nutrition and no real fresh ingredients that a dog would typically want to eat. They're very crafty at flavoring these foods and making them. They put, you know, we call the special sauce on it. They spray something on it that the dogs will eat and that they like it, but there's no nutrition behind. It's just all flavor. And they test this stuff. They test, they do palatability tests. What can we put on this crappy food to to get dogs to eat it. So that's the kind of research they do. How can we make the cheapest food possible, but make it taste good so dogs will want to eat it? And that's what God knows what they put on there. But that's what happens sometimes. So if a dog isn't eating a fresh food diet, then, you know, we need to look at health and other things, you know, what might be going on with the dog that might be contributing to that.
Yeah. And your major players in the prescription diet category are going to be IMES, Real Canin, Purina, Hill Science Diet. And here's the thing. These companies that make this food also make Alpo and Beneful. They right. also make Alpo and Beneful. And I think when you hear those Alpo and Beneful, you're like, yeah, that's not great food. But then you say, well, what about Hill Science Diet or Purina? Well, they're made by the same dadgum company. And so I can't make that leap. If you can make that leap, okay. And I think that there are many people who just, Dr. Jasek, there's one thing that freaks out pet parents is when their dog won't eat. It's when their dog mm-hmm. won't eat. Now, I get it. If your dog is still drinking water, but he hasn't eaten in a week, he's still not going to die, right? We probably want to check it out and see what's going on. But I just don't think dogs are going to starve themselves. Now, can you offer them something else? Yeah, give them some scrambled eggs. Maybe let's do some bone broth, cook the raw food. There's a lot of things you can do without going back to the substandard low quality food. So I'm all for that. But I think that there's lots of things that can be interrupting the body. The other thing that I want to ask you about, do you think that a raw diet, and you could say a raw diet, let's go this way, a raw diet that has all of the components, meat, bones, organ, fat, some has tripe, some has veggies. Do you think a dog can develop atopic dermatitis just from eating a raw diet?
No, if it has a healthy gut, then no. But I think what happens is dogs, their digestive tracts get so out of whack that they're not breaking down and digesting the raw properly. So what throws it out of whack? Well, you know, previous diets, you know, tons of vaccines, especially in young dogs. I mean, I can't tell you how many young dogs I see, 1 to 2 years old, come in itching like mad. You know, people can't figure it out. Well, this starts after all these rounds of puppy vaccines that they have. And usually they weren't on the best diet initially. And now people are like, what's going on with the skin? And now they're willing to start to make a change. But I think that if dogs are not digesting and assimilating raw food properly, usually it's because of either other ingredients, other things they're still getting, pharmaceuticals or, you know, heartworm, flea and tick preventatives, those types of things that are continuing to insult the gut, or the gut's been hammered in the past. And I dig into these cases. Sometimes people are coming to me after they've been the rounds at the conventional vet. So the dogs have been on Apoquil, they've had Cytopoint, they've, you know, had, you know, multiple rounds of antibiotics. So their guts are just hammered. And I think this is why people perceive this as a possible food allergy, because dogs will do better sometimes on certain proteins than others. But I really don't think that true food allergies are very common at all. I think it's a gut issue, and we have to work on healing the gut and get to the root of the problem. So it's not that the raw food is causing the digestive issues. It's that the digestion needs help doing what it should be doing naturally in digesting the fresh food. And I think sometimes these overly processed foods, because they've had all the nutrition hammered out of them, there's no real food in there, they might be easier to digest in some individuals, but they're also inflammatory. So the dog may eat them better because they've got these flavors and things in to encourage them to eat. And the body might break it down a little bit better, but it's also perpetuating the underlying problem by causing inflammation. So I think that's why sometimes people say, well, my dog does better on this. Well, it's not because it's healthy or it's helping the problem. You know, if a dog can't digest and assimilate raw, then we need to really be working on getting the digestion healthier, not finding some over processed diet with no nutrition that they, you know, they might eat better because it tastes good.
Yeah. So, you know, I've heard this from some of my pet parents. Well, while on the raw diet, both of my dogs developed atopic dermatitis and stopped wanting the raw food. However, I'm now feeding hamburger and rice and they're getting better. That is not going to be a good diet long-term, right? We have, if you're just feeding a meat-based diet, your phosphorus levels are sky high, right? We have nothing to bind the phosphorus and take it out of the body. You're missing out on a lot of the organs. You're missing out on the bone, but they're getting better from just a meat-based diet, and rice is just a filler.
So are they giving something else that's providing some symptomatic relief? The dog is truly getting better on the hamburger and rice, then again, I think we need to look at, okay, why isn't this dog's digestive tract able to handle the raw diet? If, you know, if that's what's going on. Because again, I think this comes down to probably this leaky gut situation where the gut's inflamed. So when we feed the raw food, the body can't break down the ingredients, the meat, the proteins and amino acids and all of the molecules in the raw diet can't break it down to its appropriate level before it gets absorbed. So it gets absorbed in a, you know, abnormal form or bigger molecules, and then the body will tend to react to that. So the more processed a diet is, you know, their bodies might handle it better because fewer of these big molecules are going to be absorbed. But it doesn't mean it's healthy. You know, I mean, because you can give a dog that's itching Apoquil and itching will stop. Does that mean that that's a good solution? No, it's information. Okay, we know that this stops the itching in this individual, but do you want to continue keeping your dog on an immunosuppressive drug? Well, no, you also don't want to keep your dog on a diet that's inferior nutritionally. And so for whatever reason it might be working, we still need to look at, okay, why can this dog not eat a fresh food diet? Because, you know, like you said, Dee Dee, there's a handful of ingredients. There's nothing in there that a healthy dog with a healthy digestive tract should be, you know, should be able to handle that. And it doesn't matter if there's a history of IBD or pancreatitis or all these other things, all of those inflammatory diseases, I believe, are created more from the highly processed inflammatory diets that have damaged the gut. So I think people, it's sometimes just give up on the raw too quickly and don't ask this question: why is my dog not digesting the raw well? Why does it cause problems? It's not like the food is bad or it's not appropriate for your dog. It's that your dog's body needs more support in healing the gut so that they can digest the foods that they're meant to eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Another thing that came up this week, aspirin is not something that we want to give to dogs. It's a blood thinner. And what's the danger of penicillin, Dr. Jasek? I mean, some people might think that penicillin is just benign, but I don't see any reason why you would give penicillin to a dog twice a day.
Antibiotics are, you know, appropriate if you know you have a bacterial infection and that the dog's body can't get on top of and you need something to knock it out, then doing antibiotics for a few days oftentimes can help. But, you know, in my experience, if we're treating something that is truly a bacterial issue and we put them on an appropriate antibiotic, it's 3 to 5 days and that pet should be improving. So if you're
you know, giving antibiotics and it's not helping, or you give them, they get better, but then whatever is happening keeps coming back. It doesn't mean they need more antibiotics. It means you need to figure out what's the underlying cause, that the antibiotics are just, you know, just sort of a band-aid, because when the body's inflamed, we will get secondary bacterial, secondary yeast infections. But the issue is what's inflaming the body in the first place. So sometimes dogs with skin issues, they'll get these secondary staph infections because the skin's inflamed and they're scratching and licking. And those will be treated with antibiotics and they'll get better. But then it always comes back because we're not looking at the underlying cause. We need to resolve the inflammation, which, and then the body's immune system is healthier and the bacteria won't take hold and grow in the first place.
We can really endanger our pets further if we decide to start, you know, giving them injections and that sort of thing. So let's contact a holistic vet like Dr. Judy Jasek, who's at ahavet.com, ahavet.com.
You know, another thing I'm hearing here in Colorado this year, and I think because we've had such a wet spring, is people are finding a lot of ticks on their dogs.
Yes.
And, you know, man, I do not recommend the commercial flea and tick preventatives. Those are pesticides, they're neurotoxins, they're terrible. So use the essential oil sprays. I have one client that lives up in the foothills here, and she said she's been finding a lot of ticks on her dogs, and she's using a garlic supplement. It's just a garlic powder that, you know, the dogs eat and they smell like garlic and the ticks don't like that. And, you know, she said she hasn't found a tick on her dog since. So there's healthy alternatives, but this product, you know, I looked it up, it had one ingredient, garlic, none of this other, you know, crap in there or flavors, or, you know, your dog doesn't need things that are flavored or, cause those are all artificial and they're designed to make, you know, dogs eat products that they normally wouldn't eat. They're just, you know, creating a flavor that your dog would like, but it shouldn't be necessary. And if something says natural flavors, you have no idea what that is. Where is it coming from? You know, there could be six ingredients linked to that one line item on the ingredient label, and you really have no idea what you're giving your dog. So you have to go with very basic, simple ingredient, well-sourced products, because there's a lot of garbage out there and there's a lot of very effective marketing. So you have to be really careful.
Yeah. The two products that we carry that are essential oils that they've been around for a very long time is called Flea Flicker. Now, it's not just for fleas. This will help with the ticks and the mosquitoes, but here's what's in it: Lileshwa, peppermint, and citronella. That's it. Those three things. Okay. Then if you do find a tick on your dog, we don't carry it, but there's this great device, Dr. Jasek, it's called a tick key. It looks like a key. They're in some pet food stores, more the holistic ones. It's a tick key. So you take this key and it has a big hole and a small hole. You take the small hole and you wrap it around the tick and you slowly pull it out, right? We don't want to be lighting that tick's butt on fire or trying to make it, you know, squeeze it or anything out. We pull it out and we pull it out slow. Then the other thing that we have, if you have a tick and you pull it out, then we have this essential oil that's called Lime Blaster. It's in a dropper and you just put it right on the site where the tick was removed. Okay. Now, that's also going to be a gentle to the skin oil. This has a tea tree select, Lileshwa, spike lavender, and teasel.
It's pretty unusual to find tick-borne diseases here in Colorado from dogs that have been exposed to ticks. Like, people find ticks on their dogs. The cases of things like Lyme disease or Ehrlichia or Anaplasma or Babesia or these, you know, all these other tick-borne diseases that I have seen typically come from dogs that have either lived in other parts of the country or people have gone and vacationed and traveled to other parts of the country where ticks are typically way more prevalent. So Midwest and East. Now, I am telling people that are concerned, like there's a simple blood test we can do just to see if it, you know, it looks like your dog was exposed to something if they do pull a tick off of them. So that's an option too. If you know, people do find a tick and are worried about, you know, they go on Dr. Google and they're worried about Lyme disease and all this, we can do a blood test. They usually recommend waiting about a month, and we just do a simple blood test just to make sure that they're not, that, you know, they didn't pick up anything from the tick. To me, that's a much better approach than giving them these harsh chemicals, which are going to be so much more damaging to the body, meaning the conventional preventatives, the, you know, NexGard or Vantix and all those things out there. I would not do that. I would not do that on a dog. Do the natural preventatives. And if you got to test them once a month in the summertime, just, you know, to put your mind at ease, then do that. But don't use the chemicals.
But if they do test, okay, so what if they do test for something that looks like they've been exposed to Lyme disease, then what's the next protocol?
Well, the conventional treatments are antibiotics, doxycycline, for long periods of time. Now, I would do, you know, I do ozone therapy, which is one thing. Ozone has been shown to be very effective against tick-borne diseases and, you know, variety of infectious diseases. It can be very helpful. So I actually had this discussion with a client yesterday. They had a initial test done that her dog tested positive for Lyme antibodies. And we're doing another test that we just sent blood out to the lab that is going to be a little more sensitive and hopefully will give us a little better information. So then when we'll get those results, and I suggested to her that we do ozone therapy. I would definitely start with that. This dog is perfectly fine. No symptoms. Symptoms of things like Lyme disease oftentimes are lameness, because Lyme disease can inflame the joints. Dog's completely symptom free. She just, you know, found the tick and we did have this positive antibody test. So we're going to do a more sensitive test that actually measures the antibody level rather than just saying yes or no. And we have that result pending and then we'll see. And I told her I would do the ozone therapy since the dog's asymptomatic, rather than putting them on, it's like 1 to 3 months of antibiotics sometimes.
Oh my gosh.
It's a long time. Mm-hmm.
But how soon, and I guess this is dependent upon the level, but how soon would you see lameness or major inflammation in a dog after you've taken a tick out if they've been exposed to something like Lyme disease?
Mm-hmm. That can vary, because I think there's two phases to this. I think there's a lot about like Lyme disease that we don't really know, because it seems like, you know, so if it was just a matter of eliminating the microorganism, then the antibiotic should knock it out. But what we see is these long-term chronic conditions. You know, I've talked to quite a few people over the years that have been diagnosed with Lyme, and they're sick for years. Like they have these chronic inflammatory conditions. So it seems like it sets off some sort of immune reaction, or you know, there's like a second phase to this whole Lyme syndrome. And so it could show up later. So, you know, like maybe a couple of months later, the actual lameness, because it might take a while for this, you know, inflammatory process to develop in the body.
Just the pet parents hearing that lameness could occur can drive them to the Bravecto and the NexGard and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it really can.
I know. But then you're going to be creating a whole host of other problems in the dog.
Right.
So, you know, I think this is where you need to be informed. This is where a good diet, keeping the immune system strong, healthy gut, all these things that we talk about, that, you know, the body can manage these diseases, and there's natural support that, you know, that we could do. And if people just absolutely want to do the doxycycline, which is usually the antibiotic of choice, then, you know, you can do that. But again, you will likely be creating other problems for your dog on down the road.
Yeah. And to get a full list of what other problems, because that's called informed consent, which Dr. Jasek does, you want to go to ahavet.com, ahavet.com. Dr. Jasek can work with you via Zoom, via the telephone. You do not have to be here in Colorado. That is an amazing benefit that you're not going to see out there in corporate veterinary clinics. All right. Maybe some of them are doing telemedicine, but I don't know. I hear from an awful lot of people, they won't work with me unless I bring my dog in. They can actually put their hands on my dog.
You can't get vaccines via Zoom, Dee Dee. So why would they do that? Why would they do that?
That is right.
They can't make any money vaccinating animals over Zoom. So
silly me. What was I thinking?
you were thinking about somebody that's concerned about pet health and not about the bottom line.
We are not a pharmaceutical arm. We are a pet health team. All right. Mm-hmm. Take a look when you get off this podcast. I want you to go to Dogs Nectar. Take a look at that article. Again, what's the name of the article? The name of the article is Why Vets Are Getting Away with Murder.
Okay? Yeah, I read that article and it's very true. I agree with everything I read in that article. It's very sad, but very true. I think it's very accurate about what's going on in veterinary medicine these days.
So tell all those vets that want to vaccinate your dog when they are not healthy to shut their sphincter. All right. Shut their sphincter.
You had to get that in, didn't you?
Got it in. I got it in. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining the Raw Dog Food Truth. Remember, you could start your dog on a species appropriate diet. You can help them live a long, happy, healthy life. Just go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com. Where your pet's health is our business, and friends, don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snaps.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.